Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun, the midweek market update. This is Peter Schiff, host of the show and president of Euro Pacific Capital, author of Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. You know, my next book is scheduled to come out sometime. It might even come out as early as October of this year, but I doubt they'll make that date. The publishers are pushing for it, but worst case, it'll come out, I think, in January or February of next year, and it's called The Little Book of Bull Moves and Bear Markets, How to Keep Your Portfolio Up When the Market is Down. So watch for that book coming out either at the end of this year or next year. If you haven't read my first book, Crash Proof, make sure and get a copy today. Get a copy on the internet. Get a copy in a bookstore. If you've read it and you like the book, why not write a review on Amazon.com? In fact, the very last review was kind of lukewarm. The guy only gave me 3 stars, so we need to get some new reviews on there to be on top of that 3-star review. Get a few more 5-star reviews up there. Also, tomorrow I am doing my seminar in Washington, D.C., actually just outside of Washington. We couldn't even get a room. I was surprised and how difficult it was to get a hotel room. We've got about 220, 230 people already signed up for the Washington, D.C. Seminar. I think we got room for about 250 in the seating. So if you haven't already signed up, there's not a lot of room left for people to sign up, but it is scheduled for tomorrow at 6 to 8:30 p.m. I think it's in Rockville, Maryland, just outside of the Beltway there in Washington, D.C., but for anybody who is planning on attending, I will see you tomorrow evening. And then I'm also going to be on Bloomberg Television. When I'm in Washington, D.C., I'm going to be recording or doing a live show at 3:15 p.m. on Bloomberg Television. That's New York time. So if you're there, if you want to watch that live, you can tune in to watch me on Bloomberg Television. I'm going to be spending Friday at the Capitol, and having some meetings with Ron Paul and a few other people, trying to come up with a strategy on where we go from here with respect to Ron Paul and the tremendous amount of grassroots support he has been able to garner during this presidential campaign. What can we do? Where can we go from here? So I'm going to be doing that on Friday. We also just sent out an email. We've got an extension on the early bird special. We were able to get $100 off for people who want to sign up for Mark Skousen's Freedom Fest in Las Vegas in July. And it is a very good conference. A lot of free market-oriented thinkers are there. I was there and I spoke last year, and it was a good time. I'm going to be doing a lot more with the conference this year around. The only negative is that it's in July in Vegas, where it is pretty hot. But other than that, you know, it's a good time, and I would encourage people, if you haven't gone to one of these Freedom Fests, to sign up for it. And if you do call, if you're calling directly, make sure to let the people know that you are a Euro Pacific Capital client there, and that you will get the 10% off, or the $100 off, rather, not 10%, $100 off on the fee for the conference. You know, a lot going on in the markets. Once again today, the U.S. dollar hit a new all-time record low against the euro. The euro almost hit 1.60 against the dollar. The dollar was weak across the board today. It lost about 2% of its value against the Canadian dollar, although it's not a record low against the Canadian dollar. But the dollar got clobbered pretty much across the board. Oil hit a new record high today, $115 a barrel for crude oil, and continuing to go higher. Other commodities were strong. Gold was up again. We've now recovered almost halfway back to $1,000 an ounce. We're about $950. It's amazing. Again, I was on Fox News again today, as I am every Tuesday and Wednesday, Fox Business, rather. And again, they want to celebrate the Dow. The Dow is up 200 points today, and they're saying, let's celebrate it. And I try to point out, but nobody seems to make the connection. What difference does it make if the market is going up if the dollar is losing value? I mean, who cares? I mean, priced in other currencies, the Dow barely gained any value today. And, of course, the reason that the Dow is rising is because some companies are reporting good earnings. But why are they reporting good earnings? Because their earnings are coming from abroad. So they're earning more dollars. Well, big deal. The dollars are less valuable. So, of course, you earn more of them because each one that you earn has a reduced value. But for some reason, hardly anybody can seem to get that connection. But to me, it seems so simple. It seems so simple. I mean, what difference does it make if you earn more dollars, if the dollars you earn give you less purchasing power? I'd rather earn fewer dollars, but have the dollars I earn give me more purchasing power. It's very easy to increase your dollar earnings when the dollar is gaining value, but it doesn't mean you're any better off. Just like if I shrink the number of inches on a ruler, and if I shrink it down to 6 inches instead of 12 inches for a foot, it doesn't mean I'm 12 feet tall and I'm going to be able to, stuff a basketball just because I've got this tiny ruler telling me I'm 12 feet tall. I'm still 6 feet. I'm no taller than I was, and I still won't be able to dunk a basketball. But this is the people somehow, even professionals in the industry, don't seem to put two and two together. They think they say, oh, there goes Peter Schiff again talking about the weak dollar. We don't care about the weak dollar. The Dow was up 200 points. Well, sure, but it's up $200. I mean, that's how we measure the Dow. The Dow is $12,500. And if you're going to ignore what the dollar is worth, then who cares what the Dow is worth? It's meaningless unless you put it into its proper context. And you've got to do that. And so, the fact that the Dow is up 200 points today, again, means nothing as far as I'm concerned. And look at the best performing sector in the market today. What was it? It was the gold stocks. The gold stocks dropped about 5% today if you measure it by the HUI. One thing that's interesting to me about the gold stocks right now is that gold itself has not really taken out the post the high since it dropped sharply from the $1,000 high. But gold stocks have. And now I seem to see a breakout in gold stocks relative to the price of gold, which potentially could be a bullish sign. I mean, a lot of people think that that's a bullish sign. I mean, the gold stocks have been underperforming the metal for a long time. And if the stocks are finally starting to outperform, it could be the indicator of a bigger move in the price of gold coming up in the short run. So, if this market is going to rally, I think that the gold stocks are going to lead, which shows it really isn't a true bull market, right, even if it is one. But, the Dow is still below 12,700, 12,800. I still see a lot of overhead resistance in the broad market averages, but, I don't see any overhead resistance right now in the gold stocks except for the absolute highs. But these stocks are still in bull markets, as is the price of gold itself. And I would continue to recommend that if you don't own precious metals, if you don't own gold or silver, that you take a position, before we're making new highs. Then I always like to get people into these markets, on a pullback. And even though we're not on the lows of the pullback, we're still 50 bucks, 60, 70 bucks off the highs, maybe in gold, a couple of dollars an ounce off the highs in silver. It's better to buy now than wait till the gold and silver are making new highs, because I'm confident they're going to make new highs. It's just a question of when. I don't think it's even going to be that long a wait on the precious metals. So, again, I like the Perth Mint. I've talked about the Perth Mint many, many times. You want to talk to Danny Dwyer or her husband, Matt, or any of the brokers that you're used to working with at Euro Pacific Capital, they can get you information at the Perth Mint. But the number to call directly is 800-993-8350, 800-993-8350. I know I've got some phone calls already in the queue. If you want to call up and ask a question or make a comment, the number to call, is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. You know, a couple of big things that have happened over the last week. One, of course, is the merger in the airline sector with a potential merger, rather, with Delta Airlines and Northwest. And it's interesting, you know, I'm watching all the politicians comment about it. And of course, you know, the merger needs to get approval from the Congress. And they're all wondering, how is this going to impact the consumer? Is this going to be a negative? Is this going to lead to higher prices or diminished service? And of course, the answer is, of course it is. Of course it is. That's why they're merging. I mean, but it's ridiculous because the airlines are losing money. They're losing a ton of money. And the reason they're losing money is because the fares are too low. They're not losing money because enough people aren't flying. The flights are packed. The reason they're losing money is because they're not charging enough. And so in order to increase the fares, to restore a decent profitability, they've got to reduce the flights. That's just the bottom line. And so Americans are going to face much, much higher airfares. That's unfortunate, but that's the reality because we're just a poor nation right now. We're a lot poorer than we used to be. It costs a lot more to fly these airplanes because of the diminished value of the dollar. And so Americans are going to have to pay a lot more to fly. And, of course, a lot of Americans won't be able to afford a price that is high enough to generate a profit for the airlines. But, of course, the airlines are not charitable organizations. They've got to make a profit, and not just eke out a profit. They've got to make a profit high enough to compensate them for the risks of running an airline. So they've got to get a decent profit, probably a better than decent profit. And these airlines are not going to be profitable until they dramatically reduce their costs. They've got to contract their overhead. They've got to reduce their employees. They've got to lay people off. They've got to cut back on the number of flights. And they've got to charge a lot more for their tickets. And that's the way to restore profitability. The politicians don't want to admit that, but that's the reality. That's the reality. And, you know, if they don't let this merger go through, well, then what's going to happen? The companies go bankrupt, and then airfares will go even higher. So the mergers are going to go through. There's going to be more mergers. There's going to be more consolidations. And the bottom line, at the end of the day, we're going to have far fewer Americans that can afford to fly because the prices are going to be a lot higher. You know, you're not going to get all these discounted fares because the airlines are going to reduce capacity. Right now, they have so many planes flying around, they got to fill them up, and so they fill them up at low prices. Meanwhile, they can't make a profit. But this is a sign of the times. It's a sign of our economy continuing to deteriorate and our standard of living decline. And this is symptomatic of what's going on. Same thing that's happening in the retail space. You know, in the last week, Linens and Things announced that they're going bankrupt. And also we've seen a merger between two companies that were probably headed for bankruptcy, Blockbuster and Circuit City. Although it's not a merger, I think it's Blockbuster is offering to buy out Circuit City. But these are two troubled companies. But ultimately this is, you know, the beginning of what I believe is going to be a wave of bankruptcies and consolidations in the retail space. I mean, this is all part of the decline of our standard living. You know, the bottom line is we have way too many retailers in the United States. We've got too many stores selling products that we didn't make. You know, we've got, you know, more people working in retail probably in America than any other country on the face of the earth. And, of course, everything we're selling is stuff that we imported. And the whole business model for the American retailer is to import cheap goods from abroad and then sell them to Americans who buy them with a credit card. This business model is going to collapse because the cheap foreign imports are going to go away. I mean, there's no question. They're already in the process of going away, but they're going to go away a lot more as the dollar continues to lose value. And we're going to see the credit contract, consumer credit, go away. So this whole business model is going to blow up. There's not going to be cheap foreign imports, and Americans aren't going to have access to the credit cards for consumer debt. So, you know, there's going to be a wave of bankruptcies in these retailers, and what we're seeing right now is just a taste of things to come. But it's all, again, part of the overall decline in our standard of living, and that decline is coming from the fall in the value of the dollar, which means that Americans, you know, have to spend more and more money for the things that they want. But on the other side of the coin, you've got, obviously, as the dollar loses value, other currencies are gaining value, and maybe airfare becomes less expensive and more affordable in other parts of the world. You know, it's also interesting, too, you know, the euro, one of the reasons the euro hit a new record high today was that the Europeans reported a higher-than-expected inflation. And it's interesting, if you look at the inflation rates coming from around the world, Singapore is reporting their highest inflation in 30 years, you know, over 6%. Saudi Arabia has got the highest inflation rate in 27 years, about 8.5%. China's over 8%. You know, Germany's got the highest inflation that they've had, and, you know, they're about 4%. I mean, you look around the world at all the other countries that are reporting inflation rates that are higher than the inflation rate that America reports, yet their currencies are going up. I mean, how can this be? How can the euro be up, what, 15% this year against the dollar, whatever it is, yet their inflation be higher than ours? Does that make any sense? How can all these countries around the world that peg their currency to ours, that adopt our monetary policy, therefore our inflation rates, how can their inflation be twice as bad as ours? It can't be. It doesn't make any sense. The only reason, the only thing that makes sense is that we're lying. The government is, again, what I've been saying, the government is not reporting honest inflation. That the way the United States calculates inflation, the way the CPI has been designed, it automatically comes up with an inflation number that is far below what is actually happening. Because how can we in America, with a currency that is falling in value, be experiencing rates of inflation lower than other nations whose currencies are rising in value relative to ours? It doesn't make any sense, because it's the value of your currency that determines prices. If your currency is gaining in value, then prices can fall because your currency is worth more. Therefore, you don't need as many to buy certain goods. But when your currency is losing value, then prices have to rise, because if your currency is weaker, you need more of it. You know, for example, if the dollar were to lose half its value, right, all else being equal, prices should double, because now you would need twice as many dollars to give the seller of that merchandise the same purchasing power. The dollar loses half its value, you need twice as many. Yet the government wants us to believe that despite the fact that our currency is losing a lot of value, that inflation here is lower than it is in the countries whose currencies are gaining value against ours. That makes absolutely no sense. Anyway, let me quickly, again, you know, go to the calls. I'll take the first caller. I've got Fan Ying again calling from New York. Go ahead, Fan Ying.
Hello, Peter. How's everything? I'm doing good. I have two questions, and first question is, can you do Swiss-based annuities? Hello?
Well, you can. I mean, we're not a Swiss insurance company, so we're not legally allowed to sell annuities, but if you have an interest in getting an annuity, certainly you don't want to annuitize an income stream in dollars. It'd be much better to annuitize Swiss francs. Plus, the Swiss insurance companies who would write you annuities, you know, in general, you can find AAA rated companies over there. You can't find anybody rated like that in the United States. So you can get a better insurance company guaranteeing your annuity, and they'll do it in the Swiss franc. So if you're going to go for annuities, you know, seek out a company in Switzerland, an insurance company that can write you one. But, you know, I don't sell them because I'm not allowed to do it.
And the second question is, assuming the U.S. Post-U.S. Economic collapse and all the currencies all realign, they dump the dollar, what is the political and ethnic and racial risk of warfare in the Asian Pacific region, such as the Southeast Asian and the Korean Peninsula?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the risks are in that.
Post collapse.
Post-U.S.
collapse. They're saying about some type of
no.
Tibet.
I don't think the U.S. is is that much of a stabilizing factor as people think. So I think that the world has far more to lose financially and economically from propping America up than they have to lose by allowing it to collapse. And at some point, they're going to realize that, and they're going to withdraw their support or their subsidies from our economy.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, and I'll get off the line.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Let me actually take a quick break. We'll do the first commercial, and then we'll be back for more calls. And if you want to call in, there's only about three or four people on hold now. If you want to get in, it's 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hello, we are back, and I am taking your calls live at 888-678-9597. The next call is John from Canada. Go ahead, John.
Hi, I have two questions. The first question is that there's an argument going around about going back to the gold standard, and the argument is that we have 4.5 million ounces of gold in the world, 6.7 million population and counting. That's only 0.7 ounces per person and dropping. So if we go back to the gold standard, there's not enough money to go around, and the economy would be anemic. So the result would be that we would go back to the fiat currency anyway. So what's your take on that?
Well, you know, it doesn't matter how many ounces of gold circulate. Prices will merely adjust to the ounces of gold. So the price of gold will simply rise dramatically, and prices will adjust accordingly. I mean, you can theoretically run the entire world economy on 1 ounce of gold if there is only 1 ounce. So I don't think it matters, you know, how many ounces there are in existence relative to the global population. I mean, that's something that people who support fiat currencies try to bring up as a flaw in gold, saying there's not enough of it. Well, I mean, the fact that it's scarce is what gives it value. I mean, you need your money to be scarce. It can't be abundant, because if it's abundant, it's not going to work as money. So I think that's nonsense. And if you actually look at prices in terms of gold, if you look, for example, at the price of oil, has been pretty constant relative to gold for 100 years, you can see that the price relationships still work, and that gold is very effective as a medium of exchange and a store of value.
Okay, so it's good you said that, but the thing is that one would say if the government doesn't print currency like crazy, fiat currency, well, what would our argument, wouldn't they be able to counter and say, well, we can just run one U.S. dollar in the economy, right?
No, because they you know, when you have fiat currency, they're going to print it. They're going to print it into oblivion, which is what they're
doing. They don't.
You can't do that with gold, because you have to actually mine it. You have to find the gold. You just can't, you know, if you're on a gold standard, the government just can't create money, which means if the government wants money, it has to levy taxes, you know, or it has to legitimately borrow it. It can't simply create it out of thin air and spend it, which is what it's doing now, and pretend it does that without exacting a cost on society.
But you're saying it's okay, we have a fiat currency, but if they don't print it to oblivion. So let's say we have 100 bills in circulation.
Look,
100 is all we have, then it's okay. Is that what you're saying?
In theory, a fiat currency will work, but in practice it can't work.
Right.
Because it depends on politicians resisting the temptation to print money, and they've proven historically that they can't do that. So we know that fiat currencies don't work, because politicians are not cannot be trusted. They just can't. So it's a, you can, in theory, you can say, yes, we don't need gold. If we could change the human psyche and change the people who run for political office and the people who are appointed to central bankers, if we can somehow replace them with some kind of a robot that would, then yes, it would be possible not to have gold money. But unfortunately, we haven't been able to do that. We have the same type of human frailties that we had, whenever the printing press was invented. So we know from practical experience that fiat currencies never work. They always fail. And that's why, and we know from practical experience that gold does work.
Right. And the second question is, I'm in Canada. So, as you've seen euros going up, Canadian dollars going up against the U.S., so does this mean I can sit back in Canada and count my money and don't care about this collecting gold business? And, maybe even Americans should be working in Canada. Is that what, imagine people should be doing then?
The Canadian dollar is losing value, too, against gold. All currencies are losing value. Why do you think
the U.S.
is rising across the world? All politicians are inflating. Nobody can be trusted. But the dollar, the U.S. dollar, is the one that's at the most risk, which is why we say get out of the dollar, have your investments denominated in other currencies, but also have some money in gold and commodities and things of that nature, because every government on the face of the earth is irresponsibly increasing the money supply, and they shouldn't be doing it.
Right. How come I don't see you on CNBC anymore?
I'm not on CNBC because they won't have me on anymore. But thank you for the call. I don't want to spend too much time. I've got Larry on the line from Texas. Go ahead, Larry. Is Larry there from Texas?
Yes. Hi, Peter. I appreciate you taking my call. I am a teacher who is hoping to retire here in the next 5 or 6 years, and I am pretty much bound to a 403b7 account, which limits my options as to what I can do. And right now, a significant portion of my money is tied up in a Treasury inflation-protected securities through Vanguard. Now, what's going to happen when interest rates start going up with that fund?
Well, I don't trust those inflation-protected securities at all, because the inflation protection that they give you is tied to the CPI. Now, the CPI does not reflect inflation. Inflation could be 10%, and the CPI says it's 2%. So if you want real inflation protection, you can't buy any of the so-called inflation-protected securities that are being marketed by Wall Street, because they don't provide you any protection whatsoever. Because what you've actually done is the equivalent of hiring the fox to guard your hen house.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really want inflation protection, which you definitely should have, you need to invest abroad. You need to own assets that are not in the dollar. So you're out of the dollar, because inflation means the dollar is losing value. So you want to own the other currencies or the other assets against which the dollar's loss can be measured. But you don't want to have your investments simply in U.S. dollars tied to some type of CPI, which we know is meaningless. I mean, it's possible that we can have 20 or 30% inflation next year, yet the CPI claims that it's only 2 or 3%. So forget about it. It is absolutely meaningless.
So if I'm not looking to get into the market completely, what's better? Am I better in a money market fund? Am I better in the tips? Or am I...
No, you're not. You're not good in either one of them. You got to get out. You have to understand that the U.S. dollar is being debased, that the value of our money is going to decline substantially over time, and you got to get out of it.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going to lose. You're going to lose purchasing power, and you're going to have Washington and Wall Street trying to convince you that it doesn't matter what the dollar is worth, that as long as you have your dollars, that the value of the dollar means nothing. That as long as you're not trying to just travel around as a tourist in Europe, the dollar can lose all of its value, and as far as they're concerned, you've lost nothing. Well, I know better. I know the dollar's value is the most important aspect of the whole thing. It doesn't matter how many dollars you have if they don't have any purchasing power. And the purchasing power internationally is directly related to the purchasing power here. It's not like the dollar can lose value abroad but retain its value domestically. That's not possible. Wall Street wants you to believe that as long as you don't leave the country, that it doesn't matter what the exchange rate is, and that's nonsense. And, you know, you can have that argument with somebody from Zimbabwe and try to convince some poor guy in Zimbabwe who's starving to death that it doesn't matter what the Zimbabwe dollar is worth. Because, you know, he'll obviously differ with you. Because if that wasn't the case, he wouldn't be starving now.
Right. Well, I appreciate your time, then. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks for the call, Larry. Let's go to Tony in Tennessee.
I'm a Euro-Pacific client and an avid listener. I'm also a reader of your dad's books, and I'd like to first start out by saying thank you so much and your dad for such hard work you guys have done. But my first question would be, I have a concern in starting a new business with the economy in the state it's in. I'd like to know your take on that.
Well, what kind of business is it?
I'm looking at liquor, alcohol in Tennessee.
You open up a liquor store?
Yes, sir.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, certainly, you know, people are going to drink, I guess, in good times and bad. I mean, some people say that in bad times people drink more than in good times just because it's an inexpensive way to have a good time, and maybe you can – it's a form of a way to escape reality. But a lot of that's going to be local. I mean, the liquor business – I mean, you're not a bar. You're just actually selling liquor?
Package, yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a lot of it's going to depend on the local and where you're located and the traffic and the margins. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a business that potentially could still do well in a recession. I mean, you know, even though, yes, it's a discretionary purchase, people can decide, you know, I don't have a job right now. I really can't afford to drink, so I'm not going to do it. But on the other hand, people might say, you know what, all I'm going to do is drink because I don't want to deal with reality.
Right.
I don't know. It's a tough call, but it's probably, you know, better, you know, to start a liquor store than to say to start, you know, a retail store, you know, for general merchandise.
Even earning U.S. dollars.
In general, the types of businesses that I would not want to start businesses that are retail-oriented, that are selling to American consumers. I want to have businesses that are selling to international consumers, but that are utilizing local labor. I would look towards exports and, you know, as more of a growth-oriented business. And as far as domestic businesses, businesses that help Americans cope with a falling standard of living. And there are a number of businesses I can think of that would do well in a situation where Americans are economizing or trying to find ways to utilize scarce resources, to be efficient in their use of energy. I mean, maybe even things in helping people restructure debts. There are a number of businesses that are probably, that do well in an economic contraction. But, you know, it's a mixed bag whether or not, you know, just being a retailer of alcohol would be a growth industry.
So it is a chance. Basically, it's a chance.
One thing, though, the price of alcohol is going to be going up, you know, and so it's going to get more expensive for people to drink. That's for sure. Now, maybe they can trade down to a cheaper brand. I mean, you can always go from a premium vodka to a less expensive vodka and basically get the same effects from the drink. But anyway, I wish you luck in your business, and hopefully you can make some money. You can become a client if you're not already a client.
I am a client. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Let me go to Ryan. Ryan is in Nevada. You online, Ryan?
Yes. You talked earlier about how the retailers are going to be under a lot of pressure here, already and then coming up even more so in the future. What are your thoughts about shorting the retailers and maybe the XRT, the ETF?
Well, if you're going to short stocks at all, that's what I like to short. I like to short the retailers, the financials, the home builders. I mean, anything that is a pure play on Americans spending money, borrowing money, paying money back. I mean, all those industries are going to be in contraction. And so if you're going to be short, that's where you want to be short. You might want to be long if you wanted to do it as a spread. You want to be long the U.S. stocks that are export-oriented, that are focusing on servicing the increasing wealth of foreigners rather than the diminishing wealth of Americans. So you know, the companies that are exporting, that have local cost structures but foreign income streams, those would be the U.S. stocks that you want to favor. Of course, from the long side, my approach is just not to invest in U.S. stocks at all, but to invest in foreign stocks, because that way, you know, you have all your earnings coming from abroad. You got many U.S. companies that are reporting horrendous earnings here. Like, look at General Electric that came out with those bad earnings in the last week. You know, the only bright spot was their overseas earnings. They did fantastic overseas. Now, if they were purely, if all their earnings came from overseas, it would have been a great, great quarter. But their overseas profits, you know, were offset by the problems in the domestic market. So that's the main reason, or one of the reasons I like to invest abroad, is because these foreign companies are not going to have their earnings dragged down by losses in the U.S. market. Now, to some extent, some of our foreign companies have. Some companies have been involved in lending money to Americans, or their stocks have been brought down in sympathy with weakness in stocks that have fallen, well, you know, because of what's happening in our markets. But you are much more insulated. So if you really want to get exposure to the strengthening foreign economies and the strengthening foreign currencies, don't just settle for buying domestic stocks that have an international component. Buy international stocks that have no domestic component.
Right. I mean, I'm invested in gold and oil and international. I mean, I'm just thinking of, you know, it might be a good play here, you know, for, you know, 5% of the portfolio.
I mean, you can be short stocks as long as you're long other stocks.
Right, right.
The problem with being short, of course, is if you get hyperinflation, which we can certainly get, then everything is going to go up, you know, in terms of dollars. So you can lose on your shorts, even though in real terms, those stocks are collapsing in value.
Right. I mean, that's a big concern, obviously, when you're going short. So, yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you, what are the chances, you know, that the Fed, you know, will kind of shut off? If they shut off, then it would be, you know, a good idea to short these guys. But if not, you know, you might get hyperinflation, and then they're, you know, going to go up or stay the same, basically. So I guess, what are the, you know...
I don't know what the chances are, but, you know, there's definitely a good possibility of hyperinflation. But even if we don't have hyperinflation, we're going to have very high inflation. And the dollar's going to lose a lot of value. So, you know, the solution is don't own dollars. Get your money out of dollars now, and we'll see how bad it's going to get. But we're going to see from the safety of a foreign portfolio or from the safety of having gold or other non-dollar assets.
Okay. So, I mean, basically, it's not a terrible idea if, you know, you're the majority of your investments are in gold and oil and overseas. Sure.
I personally, that's how I have my portfolio. I mean, I have pretty much all my assets either in foreign assets or, you know, gold or oil. You know, I don't have any exposure directly to the U.S. domestic economy. I don't want to. I mean, I look forward to being able to do that one day, and I'm very optimistic that one day we will finally address these problems and get back on the right track. And I would love to be able to invest in U.S. stocks when they're cheap, when we see a real recovery in front of us. But right now, we haven't even gotten to that point yet. Right now, the powers that be are continuing to make the situation worse. So the deck is being continuously stacked against us, and so we've got to keep our posture out of this country until there's a meaningful change. But I thank you for the call.
All right, thanks.
And let me go back to another caller from Tennessee. It's the second guy today, Shelley from Tennessee.
Hello?
Is Shelley there?
I'm here.
Yes.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question. My husband and I are clients of yours with Euro Pacific, and I'm asking an unrelated question, actually. We're debating on when to buy a house. And I know that the market is declining, and I know it's very much suffering in other areas, but Nashville, Tennessee area seems to be growing, not declining. And their home prices are not, they're pretty steady. I think they've only gone down 0.06% in the last year or so. And my question is, how do we know when it's the good time to buy? Because already now, we're just kind of afraid to do it.
Well, I definitely don't think it's the right time to buy. I think that real estate prices still have a long, long way to fall. And, you know, unless you're getting a fantastic deal on a house in a foreclosure, meaning you're buying the house for maybe 50 or 60% below the mortgage, where if you do that, then maybe your downside is not that tremendous. Even if you're buying a house at 50 or 60% below the mortgage balance, I don't think you're necessarily going to make any money on it, but maybe you're not dramatically overpaying for it. But I certainly would not buy a house from somebody, you know, in a normal arm's length transaction where it's not in foreclosure and the house is on the market and you're just agreeing to buy it. I think if you do that, you're still going to overpay. I think we have a tremendous decline in front of us in the real estate market. The bubble has just burst, but the majority of the air is still in it. Most homeowners still cling to the notion that real estate is a great investment for the long run. Most people that are looking to buy real estate right now are still looking at it as if it's a can't-lose investment. They look at it like, well, this is great. I've got a great buying opportunity because there's been a pullback in the market. I'm going to make money buying my house. That's wrong. By the time the market bottoms out, the buyers of real estate are going to know that they're not going to make any money. Nobody is going to buy a house thinking that it is a wise investment. People are going to buy houses for the same reason they buy boats. You know, and I know that because I'm a boat owner. And if you don't know this and you're thinking about buying a boat, then maybe you should listen up. But, you know, I mean, it's a lot cheaper to rent boats, right? Boats are money pits. But people buy them anyway, despite the fact that it's economically doesn't make any sense to buy them. They buy them because there is some pride in ownership, and it is nice to own your own boat, and there are certain benefits to owning a boat versus renting a boat whenever you want to use one, even though the rental option is far more economical. Nobody buys a boat because they think the boat's going to appreciate, but they buy them knowing full well that it's more expensive than renting. And ultimately, that's going to be the attitude in home ownership. People are going to buy homes not because they think they're going to get rich, but because they want to own the home, and they're willing to pay a little bit more to own the home, and they know that over time it costs money. And so we need to restore that attitude towards owning a home. It's a purchase. It's a consumption. You're buying a good. You're not making an investment. And so that needs to change. And the people who own homes who are selling them, it needs to be realistic about what these homes are worth. Right now, we're still too close to the top of the bubble. The attitudes haven't changed. They're reverted back to normal. So homes are still much too expensive. And one of the ways you know that they're much too expensive is look at the glut of real estate on the market. There's a huge glut of property because the property is overpriced. There's not a glut because properties are underpriced. If properties were underpriced, there would be a shortage. There would be very few houses on the market. The fact that there are so many houses on the market and there are no buyers means that they're overpriced. So stay away from the real estate market. If you're buying because you really want to own a home and you don't care if the home loses value, that might be one thing. But if you're trying to buy a home because you think you're getting a good deal and you think you're going to make money, then think again.
I think we just don't want to lose money. We're in an apartment. We're ready to move into another house. We sold our house about a year ago. And it's not so much that we want to make money when we sell it. We want to not lose the equity that we do have. And the builders don't seem to be wising up. It seems like they're staying steady, if not raising it a little bit, or losing incentives rather than knocking some price off to get rid of this real estate that they've invested in. And it's frustrating.
Yeah, look, I mean, there are plenty. Look,
excuse me.
I'm renting a house myself. There are plenty of houses for rent. So you don't have to, if you want to be a renter, your options are not simply the apartment market. There are plenty of single family homes that can be rented. So I would look into the homes that are for lease in your area and see how much they cost and see what they're like and compare that to, you know, the homes that are for sale and what you would have to pay to buy one of those homes today. Now, even if you can't find a good rental alternative, if you can stay in your rental apartment for another year or two, then I think you might find even better prices. I think the longer you can hold out, the cheaper the buying is going to be.
Okay. Well, we can definitely do that. I'm impatient by nature. My husband's like, wait, wait, wait. I'm like, now. So I agree. I don't want to lose our butt. But again, I'm not in it to make double what we're going to put down on it. I just, want some elbow room.
Yeah, but still, people are all thinking about, I want to buy a house, I want to build equity, I don't want to throw money away on rent. When you buy a house, you're still throwing money away, so to speak, but you're throwing it away on maintenance, on insurance, on taxes, on interest. But again, it's not throwing it away because you have to live somewhere. So paying a mortgage is no more or less throwing money away than paying rent. Or are you throwing money away when you buy food? Are you throwing money away when you buy clothing? Are you throwing money away when you take a vacation? No, you're getting something of value in exchange for that money. And if you decide to spend your money on rent, that's fine. Don't let a realtor convince you that you're throwing your money away because you got to live somewhere.
Right. Well, thank you very much for your advice. I'm hoping the bubble pops harder soon. Thank you. Have a great day.
Sure. Let me take the next commercial break, and we will be back for some more calls in the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
We are back, and there's still room for another call or two, our time rather. The number is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. And let's go to Fred calling from New Jersey. Are you there, Fred?
Yes, I'm here. Peter, thanks for taking my call. I watch you faithfully on Fox and when you're on Bloomberg or on Glenn Beck, and appreciate you edifying the country on some of the real perils that are out there. One of the things that it's just shocking to me is that, you know, say even 15 years ago with President Clinton in office, a barrel of oil was $13 or $14. Now we're up to, I don't know, $115 exactly. How is our economy even holding up as well as it is in the face of that?
Well, you know, it's not really holding up. I mean, that's the point. I mean, the economy is in a recession. But the numbers are you know, not really evidencing the extent of it, because you know they're basically phony. I mean, I don't think that the numbers really reflect reality. They reflect some government version of reality. But you know, the economy is not holding up. I mean, we're a complete disaster. It's a mess, and you know we're borrowing the money necessary to pay this oil bill. I mean, our trade deficit is exploding through the roof. Because of the high oil prices as part of it, and we're putting it on a credit card. So, you know, the only reason that we're still able to buy all this oil is because we're borrowing the money. But, you know, we got to pay it back. We got to pay it back with interest. So we're digging ourselves into a deeper hole.
No, I hear you on that. And maybe the economy is the wrong word, but how are market averages even only down, you know, less than double digits? I know they were down double digits earlier in the year, but it seems to me like the S&P and the NASDAQ should be down way more than they are from last October, considering, you know, everything that's going on in the economy. And I hear you, and I've read Crash Proof, and I think you do a great job of pointing out, you know, how the CPI is pretty much manufactured and not a real barometer for what's going on with inflation. But it seems to me like...
Remember, the markets are going down. I mean, they're going down in terms of other currencies. The market's going down in terms of gold. But the reason it's not going down is because the Fed is creating all this money. I mean, imagine where the market would be right now if the Fed hadn't bailed out Bear Stearns, if they had let Bear Stearns just fail, if they hadn't provided the $30 billion in financing that let J.P. Morgan buy him. I mean, Bear Stearns would have gone under. Merrill Lynch would probably be bankrupt by now. So would Lehman Brothers. Do you think the stock market would be at 12,500? No, it would probably be at 8,500. So the government is interfering in the market. It's stopping it from going down. But the cost of that is all the inflation, all the additional inflation that is being created, all the additional moral hazards that are being laying into the system, and we are sowing the seeds for even bigger losses in the future. So we've made a deal with the devil here, the government has. I mean, we're postponing some substantial pain in exchange for even bigger pain down the line.
No, it totally makes sense, and it just seems to me like it would be more evident. And I agree with what you're saying with the deval and the economy's doing worse than it looks like it's doing on paper. If you watch CNBC or Fox, you know, just looking at the averages, it's a little bit misleading, especially if you price it in gold. Just one question. This is a little bit off topic, but where do you think the need for immediate gratification started in our country, getting people into this, you know, this debt culture that we're in now, where everyone needs to own everything right now and then pay for it later? You know, like, I want to own a home even though I can't put any money down on it. Where did that start?
I don't know where it started. I mean, certainly it's been building over time, you know. And, you know, it sounds good. I mean, it's like, you know, if you're going to raise your children and you're going to tell your children, you know, you just eat candy and junk food, that sounds a lot better than telling them they got to eat, you know, their meat and their vegetables. So that's what politicians are telling American voters. You don't have to save. You don't have to delay your gratification. You can have whatever you want when you want it. And that obviously is a much better sounding message than you can have what you want when you want it. You got to save up for it. So, and it's been encouraged by our tax system. And so it's something that has happened. I don't think it's been any kind of grand design. And of course, the only reason that it's been able to happen was because we were such a rich and powerful country in the first place. And we got rich and powerful by doing the right things, by doing the exact opposite of what we've been doing. And we became so rich that our currency became the world reserve currency, and we were able to get away with what we've been doing. No other country could have done this. Nobody could have dug themselves into so deep a hole. So, there would have been some kind of market-imposed discipline on this type of behavior. But we didn't get any discipline, and so we kept doing it because it seemed like, you know, it's like if you can eat all kinds of, you know, junk food and you wouldn't get fat, well, you'd eat more and more of it. But, you know, if the minute you start eating, more junk food, you start to see your waistline expanding, you know, a lot of people say, oh, okay, that's it. I better start exercising. I better start dieting because, you know, you're going to change your behavior because you see the negative consequences of it. But if you don't see those consequences for whatever reason, then you have no reason to alter your behavior. And so we haven't had the normal market disciplines, and we're in an extreme situation that normally wouldn't have happened. That's why. And so it's going to be particularly bad.
Got it. Thanks for the insights, Peter. Have a good night.
Thanks for the call. I think we're getting low on time. I think we have about two more callers on hold, so let's say no more calls because I just think I barely have time for the last two callers. I think I've got Craig on the line in Hawaii. Are you there, Craig?
Yes, sir. Mr. Schiff, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I've read your book, and I've gone systematically through your website. The audio archives and the videos, they're great. I'm a new client, and I noticed that in one of your radio broadcasts, you're talking about extracting equity and using it to invest. And I have a property, and I'm thinking about extracting the equity. It's a commercial residential property worth about $1.3 million. And I can get a 30-year fixed at 6 1/8% right now. Would you think that would be a way to go?
Well, I mean, what percentage of the property's value are you going to be borrowing?
Excuse me? That would be less than 50%.
You've got cash flow coming off the property now?
Yeah. We got about $6,000 and rising off of the property now, but. As you noted, how long will that last? I'm not sure, you know.
I mean, you got two choices when it comes to property. You can either sell it, leverage it. And, of course, there's always risk in leverage. But personally, if you can borrow money at 60% in dollars, the money, and let me invest it in a portfolio that's 10% euros and Singapore dollars and Australia dollars, positive carry, but you've borrowed in dollars and you've invested abroad, I think that strategy will be extremely profitable for people who implement it. But you need to fully appreciate the risks and talk to one of my brokers to make sure that you understand.
I'm with Heyman in Newport.
Before you take on a debt. I really encourage people to make an investment. I don't think anybody should borrow money. Hey, should I borrow money to go take a vacation? Should I borrow money to buy a new television set? I'd say absolutely not. If you're talking about borrowing money at 6% and investing it at 7%, likely to gain value, that makes a lot more sense than to borrow money to buy a consumer good that's going to go away, that's going to depreciate to zero, and that's going to throw off income whatsoever.
And like you were saying earlier, if the inflation hits hyperinflation, then it'll just erase the debt anyway, won't it?
Ultimately, yes. Ultimately, that's what happens. And, you know, that's what the government is seeming like it wants to do. The government wants to bail out the debtor. They want to bail out Americans who have leveraged up to buy homes. They want to bail out Wall Street firms, who have loaned on this collateral. I guess they want to bail them out nominally. They're not looking at the real in real terms. They want to try to bail out the debtors by increasing the value of their assets that they own, so that they can now afford the debt. They want to create inflation. And so you want to be a debtor. I mean, the last thing you want to be is a creditor in dollars. Now, if you're a creditor in euros, if you've got your savings abroad, then you're okay because the government tax doesn't apply to you. The government, the U.S. government can't debase the euro. They can only debase the dollar.
Okay. And looking at the greater picture in the U.S. stock market, you know, since all of these insurance companies, which I need for my commercial property and stuff, what would be your take on buying long-term plans with the various insurance companies, the property insurance and stuff?
I'm not sure, but I mean, I think you've got to be very careful of everything you do with a counterparty risk because a lot of these insurance companies go under, although it seems like the Fed has prevented that from happening. But again, the way they prevent it from happening is by creating inflation, which undermines your dollars. But anyway, let me hop because I'm running out of time. I want to get to our David is on the line. Maryland, how are you, David?
Hi. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead with your question. We got a few minutes left.
I actually wanted to go see you in Washington, D.C., and
I'll be there tomorrow night.
Yeah, I know, but I've been trying to get information on where it is and the RSVP, but my broker didn't know, and I guess maybe if there's anything on the website, I can't find it.
No, I forget the exact place. It's in, it's just outside of Washington, D.C. If I had it on here, I'd tell you. But, you know, call up my number. Call up 800-727-7922 tomorrow morning and say you want to know where the Washington seminar is. You want to sign up. They'll tell you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
In Rockville, Maryland. It's in a hotel right outside of Washington, D.C. We couldn't get one, you know, just inside in the Beltway there because they were all booked up. I was surprised, but we got a hotel as close to Washington, D.C. as we could. And the reason I chose this particular date is I had to go to Washington, D.C. anyway for a meeting with Congressman Ron Paul. And I figured, well, as long as I'm in D.C., I'll have a seminar. So that was how it evolved. But, yeah, just call my office, get your name signed up, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you very much.
800-727-7922. Well, anyway, I know we're running out of time now. We just got a couple of minutes left. So, you know, thanks, everybody, for tuning in again. It should be another interesting week in the market. But, again, you know, don't be fooled by any of the cheerleading on Wall Street when they try to celebrate a 200-point rally, especially on a day when the dollar makes an all-time record low. It is absolutely ridiculous for anybody to try to claim a victory. What a hollow victory when the dollar is losing so much value, when you've got record high oil prices, to try to pretend that because the Dow is up, it's still nowhere near even a nominal record. I mean, we're still around 1,500. We've gone nowhere. You know, the Dow is nowhere. Stocks have gone nowhere. You know, Intel's earnings came out this week, better than expected. Everybody gets excited about it. Intel is exactly where it was 10 years ago. 10 years ago. Can you think of any other price the same as it was 10 years ago besides U.S. stocks? No, prices are going through the roof. So don't be fooled. I mean, don't be a boiled frog. jump out of the frying pan or out of the water and get out of the dollar. Anyway, thanks for listening. Again, the number to call to open up an account to find out about the seminar tomorrow in Washington, 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. Don't forget to get a copy of my book, Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. You got to get this book and read it before my next book comes out. Again, thanks, everybody, for listening. I will be back again next week, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, on shortwave radio and www.europac.net.